Broadcom gets their gift. NVIDIA partners up for networking. IoTech gets edgy. There's SEC reporting silliness and a closer look at the song of AI and firing in this episode of the Gestalt IT Rundown. Welcome to the Rundown for Wednesday, November 22nd, the day before Thanksgiving. We have a lot of thanks that we want to give you, but we have a lot of news as well. My name is Tom Hollingsworth. I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay. And we're very happy to have you here on the anniversary of the Humane Society, as well as National Cranberry Relish Day, which I don't believe belongs on a Thanksgiving table. What about my co-host, Mr. Stephen Foskett? What's your feelings on cranberry relish?
Well, as any NPR listener knows, 2 cups of raw cranberries, 1 small onion, 1/2 cup of sugar, 3/4 cups of sour cream, and 2 tablespoons of horseradish make something that looks disgusting but tastes delicious.
Well, good thing is we have a recipe for some great tech news that we're going to be bringing you today, because we have some really big stories, and we're going to get to that story in a little bit. But we want to start with the other big story this week, and that would be Broadcom, because they have finally appeared to clear their last hurdle in this whole saga of the VMware acquisition. There was an 11th-hour speed bump from the Chinese regulatory agencies that threatened to torpedo the whole enormous deal. Well, good news is that they did get their approval with some conditions from the Chinese regulatory agencies. It has something to do with local market sales and ensuring that VMware software will run on non-Broadcom server hardware, which I'm assuming means that it's going to run on all server hardware, just like it always has been. Now, the news for this approval came on the heels of the Chinese president's visit to the U.S., which has some people asking some questions. But as of this morning, November 22nd, the VMware acquisition has closed and VMware is now a part of Broadcom. Stephen, you followed this story really closely for a long time. What do you think about this?
Well, it's interesting. The fact that this isn't our closer look story this week, I think, is pretty much the thing that our listeners need to understand. Yes, the deal happened. Yes, there was a last minute hiccup. And yes, it kind of doesn't matter at this point. I mean, there's a lot of ink that's been spilled and a lot of words that have been said and a lot of fear, uncertainty, and doubt in the industry. And frankly, a lot of stress for VMware employees, who my heart goes out to. We all knew this day was coming, and this day is here. The deal is officially closed. There are some conditions. I think it's interesting that the conditions amount to a big fat meh, in my opinion. I think that the Chinese regulatory agency was playing a little bit of politics by delaying this. But they didn't really want to delay it. They didn't really want to mess with it. And so they let it through. And here we are. And now we've got a deal. And the deal is exactly what everybody always thought it was going to be. And in fact, as those of us who follow the company very closely already know, VMware has already been acting like they got acquired for a little while now. In fact, there have already been offers made to some employees to stay, offers made to others to leave. They're moving forward as if this deal is done. And now the deal is done. It feels like a anticlimax. Essentially, everything that we thought was going to happen has happened, and that's that. So what do we do now? Well, we do what we thought we were going to do a year ago, 6 months ago, 3 months ago, when we were talking about this deal. We move forward in a new direction for the IT industry. I think that there's a huge opportunity here for this major deal to spawn a world of wonderful, exciting startups as people leave VMware, as their options expire, as they get buyouts, as they quit. And I can't wait to see that. I also think that this isn't the end of the world for VMware and VMware customers. I think that Broadcom is going to probably handle this better than you think. And we're going to end up with kind of a status quo moment here. So, yeah, the deal closed, and it's not our top story. Who knew? If you've been waiting for NVIDIA's Spectrum X networking stack to make its way to servers, wait no longer. The company announced this week that Dell, HPE, and Lenovo will be the first companies to deploy the AI-focused Ethernet technology in their server lineups. Spectrum X is designed to serve as the communication link between GPUs, TPUs, and other AI elements using Ethernet technology, including the Spectrum 4 switch and the BlueField 3 SuperNIC. It's an alternative to InfiniBand, as well as competitor solutions offered by Cisco and Broadcom under the Ultra Ethernet Consortium banner. Tom, why couldn't they get any interesting and notable companies to adopt this?
Because I think a lot of the interesting and notable companies are going down the Ultra Ethernet path, if you will. And part of that reason is because, for lack of a better term, it's standards-based. Well, when there's a standard, it'll be standards-based. But two, you're still in this really weird spot with NVIDIA where they've got InfiniBand on one side and Spectrum X on the other. And I don't know which way they're going to want to go. Is Spectrum X going to kind of slowly start phasing out these InfiniBand deployments? Is it going to be an option for systems that need to have more than 40,000 nodes? Or is it something else entirely different? I'm glad that we're kind of moving towards this Ethernet. Like, we've seen a lot of presentations at our field day events this year where companies are talking about using ultra-fast Ethernet. And even in NVIDIA's press release, they quote that Spectrum X has about 1.6 times better performance for specific workloads over InfiniBand. So this could be a way for them to start future-proofing those investments. I think that, you know, this is something that you're going to start seeing deployed more in like GreenLake type deployments or non-NVIDIA. And I think maybe that's why they went with these larger companies that don't directly compete against these NVIDIA stacks, if you want to call them that. Because when you call up NVIDIA right now and you tell them that you need an AI setup, they're going to just drop ship you all of this stuff that's already pre-configured and ready to go for a reasonably expensive amount of money. I think here they're trying to break into that market of people who already have large deployments of Dell hardware, of HPE hardware. And they're going to say, okay, if you already have this stuff, we can get you a deployment that will work for your needs without you having to just rip out and replace and put NVIDIA hardware in there. I think, though, what's going to be interesting is to see if this is net new business. Companies that weren't really considering running these AI algorithms before because they didn't want to run InfiniBand, or if this replaces InfiniBand in existing customers. A lot of it's going to come down to how people feel about the Spectrum 4 switch and the Bluefield SuperNIC, which is not their DPU. So the Bluefield 3 DPU is a completely different animal than the SuperNIC. This SuperNIC is optimized for RDMA over Ethernet, RoCE communications. And I think that a lot of companies are going to have to weigh whether or not they want to, for lack of a better term, torch their existing setups and go with this new one, or if they're comfortable maybe running them in parallel. Time will tell, and we'll honestly know pretty soon, because HPE will probably start reporting huge wins if a lot of companies start picking up Spectrum X as their preferred AI networking technology. Stephen, we had a new announcement that I wanted to get your take on. IoTech has introduced a commercialized version of their EdgeX Foundry, which is a leading open source data platform. Edge Central promises robust data management, connecting the cloud to edge sensors in a modular and open way. Now, since you talked with IoTech as part of your Utilizing Edge podcast, I wanted to hear what you had to say about this.
Yeah, this is an interesting story. You may not know IoTech, and you would be forgiven for not knowing them, because IoTech comes more from the operational technology, industrial IoT world, than from the traditional data center IT world. That being said, they really know this stuff. Our conversation, as you mentioned, on the Utilizing Edge podcast with Andy Foster, who is a co-founder, really impressed me with his and the company's knowledge of operational technology, industrial control systems, basically what's really happening at the industrial factory, oil field edge. And this is a company that is now bringing in what was previously an open source product. Essentially, they're making a supported commercial version of an open source platform called EdgeX Foundry. EdgeX Foundry is part of the Linux Foundation's Edge organization, and it is an open source platform for everything that you've mentioned here. So essentially, it allows you to build vendor-neutral options at the edge. It allows multiple devices to interoperate. Again, since it's open source, you can add to it, you can deploy it yourself, or you can work with a company like IoTech to deploy it for you. And it does so much. It's essentially an entire platform for running containers, for moving data, for connectivity, interoperability, security, and compliance. And it's put together by some of the smartest folks in the industry. And not the smartest data center and cloud folks, but the smartest edge folks, the smartest folks who are deeply entrenched in the world of operational technology and industrial IoT. And that makes it a perfect fit for our friends over at IoTech. So again, this allows deployment of applications at the edge. It allows sharing and movement of data from edge to cloud. It allows really edge as a service. And I applaud IoTech for getting into this space because, again, it's a perfect fit for them as an organization, for their customers, and frankly, for pushing forward things in an open source and interoperable way. The ALF-V group has taken extortion to an entirely new level. This time it involves the feds. Last week they filed a complaint with the SEC against one of their victims. Get this. The target, MeridianLink, was hit by an attack and by SEC rules had 4 days to disclose it. The group stole the data and asked MeridianLink for a ransom but didn't receive a reply. So they went to the SEC and notified them that the company had been hacked by them. MeridianLink did confirm that they had been breached and they were working to find out if any customer data had been stolen. One little hiccup in the plan is that the SEC reporting rules don't actually take effect for another couple of weeks. Tom, what's up with this? Criminals calling the police on themselves?
It's a 4D chess move, and I applaud the ALF-V group for thinking outside the box here. So, yes, the SEC finally got fed up with companies that were hiding these breaches and not really like disclosing them. And so they came up with these new rules. And we even talked about it on the rundown. And we're like, this is great because now nobody can hide. And then this company tried to maybe sweep it under the rug a little bit. I mean, it's always going to come down to, was it material to the bottom line? Was it something that would, be impactful on their business? And the fact that it's a publicly traded company, that's why the SEC has jurisdiction here. So the criminals are like, you know what? If you're not going to pay us, we're going to embarrass you. And we're going to make you, basically get in trouble. If you're not going to pay us, you're going to pay the feds. Again, the little hiccup is they have until mid-December to implement these reporting rules. So maybe you jump the gun just a touch, but I think we're going to start seeing more of this. And I think we're actually going to see it kind of wrapped into the extortion thing, because now the precedent is I'm going to attack you and I'm going to steal your customer data or I'm going to encrypt everything. You better pay me. You better pay me to delete your data backups. And you better pay me not to rat you out to the SEC if you don't report this in the next 4 days. Like, it's now like the conga line of extortion, because there's so many ways for me to do this. Now, the problem, though, is that by reporting that you hacked somebody to the SEC, or maybe you're going to do it as an anonymous tip, I don't know, because there's not like a reward for doing it. You're going to have to be very, very careful, because you're going to bring down a lot of heat on you, because the next call after that one is from the SEC to the FBI. And the FBI is like, hey, we've got some people out here who are hacking our customers, our people that we look after. You need to do something about this, especially if they start getting reports that it's the same group doing it over and over again. So you have to admire the way that criminals are going to crim. So bravo for that. But I think that you've entered an entirely new phase of this kind of back and forth tit for tat thing. It's not going to pay off well for you. And to the MeridianLink folks, let's be honest, you probably could have avoided all of this if you'd have wrapped up your investigation a little bit faster and got to the SEC first. So if you're out there and you're a company that's like, oh, well, maybe I can wait until, that last hour before the thing expires before I kind of file this in secret at like 11 p.m. Mm-mm, don't do that. Get in there early. Let them know, hey, something bad happened and we need to make sure that we're on the clear here so that we don't get in trouble and we don't get extorted for more money. So take note. All right, Stephen, we've teased it. We've talked about it. It's a saga that's probably going to make a good George R.R. Martin book at some point. Let's talk about OpenAI in our closer look, because it has been a really wild week. Here's the Cliff's Notes version. On Friday, the board notified CEO Sam Altman that he's being removed. Then the president and chairman of the board, Greg Brockman, quit. OpenAI then went through three different interim CEOs over the weekend before they finally settled on a successor. Meanwhile, Altman and Brockman got hired by Microsoft via a tweet. And then the rumor started on Sunday that they were actually going to get reinstated at OpenAI, which they did on Tuesday evening. with the proviso that all of the board members, except for one, will be gone. Okay, that's a whole weekend of drama. And I know that we've avoided talking about a lot of AI stuff over 2023, but this has finally reached an entirely new level of crazy. Stephen, based on that outline, where do you want to start with this?
Well, I think we need to start by saying that this doesn't look good for anyone not named Satya Nadella. I would say that overall, wildly, weirdly, Microsoft is the big winner here because they win if they win and they win if they lose and they win if they go sideways. That being said, I guess we have to also recognize that by the time you listen to this, this story could be completely different. Because if we had recorded this episode yesterday, we would have had a whole story about Microsoft. And yet here we are today, and OpenAI is back. It's just a wild, wild story. So we don't know anything really. And also, I want to say this is Gestalt IT. This is not the Days of Our Lives. This is not, TMZ or anything like that. We are not going to speculate on the people and the politics and the humanity involved here. We're going to try to speculate based on the industry that we work in and that we live in. So if you're looking for speculation and conspiracy theories and personality stories and so on, maybe look somewhere else. But that being said, this whole thing is a personality story. It's a personality conflict. My take on it is that this really does come down to a fundamental disagreement within OpenAI about fundamental ideas, questions of ethics and the direction of the company and the direction of AI overall, and the epic and predictable clash of for-profit capitalist Silicon Valley with idealist not-for-profit entities like OpenAI was supposed to be. So I guess, Tom, do you want to kind of talk a little bit about the business angle here?
Yeah, I do, actually, because a lot of people are making hay about this, the fact that it's OpenAI. And I want to stop right there and I want to cut what the company makes out of it first. This is traditional backstabbing, backroom deal, Silicon Valley business bro crap. You've got a group of people on a board who are idealists or capitalists or ideal capitalists or whatever, and they have a vision for the way things are going to go. And what happens is they go to work on each other. It's almost like, imagine the Pirate Brethren court scene from Pirates of the Caribbean, except nobody's wearing feathers in their hats. That's how it is. They're always arguing with each other. What are we going to do? How are we going to maximize profit? What are we going to do for this being the better thing for our mission statement, whatever. The problem is that when the balance tips, and as soon as somebody goes to work on somebody else and they manage to convince somebody that something bad happens, or that if this doesn't happen, something bad will happen, then you've got a situation. And when I originally saw this, I mean, I saw conspiracy theories flying out the window and I didn't believe any of them. I focused in on the CTO, Ilya, because he looks to me like the kind of person who loves technology and doesn't really like dealing with people. But unfortunately, in a situation, in a position he's in, he has to deal with people. And more importantly, he's the best person to go to when it's time to get rid of somebody that's hard to get rid of. And if you read between all of those lines, to me, it sounds like that the campaign was to convince him that the board needed to get rid of Sam. And they did. And he was the one who made the phone call on Friday. They fired Sam before the markets closed. That should be a big indicator that they either A, don't know what they're doing, or B, were so pissed off that they didn't care if it was going to cost them a lot of money, because it did. And it cost Microsoft a lot of money too, which is one of the reasons why I think Satya got involved in all this. But I don't care if they've invented like the most magical AI thing ever. You're still going to run into these business problems. You're still going to have personalities that think they know best. And that's ultimately, I think, what happened here, is that somebody or some people on the board said that we don't like what Sam was doing and we're going to get rid of him and we're going to do whatever it takes. What they didn't count on was the fact that the entire company was behind Sam and revolted against them. And that, to me, is a bigger news story, is that 90% of the company was ready to up and quit over this, which, let's be fair, if you were Satya Nadella, they would have written you into the history books for basically acquiring an $80 billion company for nothing, because you would have had everyone come over to work for Sam. And I think that that was the point where they knew that they had lost control, and anybody else would have run away. And a lot of people are comparing this to what happened to Steve Jobs when he got ousted from Apple Computer back in the day, like back in the 80s. This is completely different, because there, the board was unified against Steve, and we have history to prove that Steve was right. But I also think here, the board is so conflicted with each other that there was no unified messaging. It was basically, as soon as we get 51% of these people to say that he needs to go, he's out, and the consequences be damned until Monday.
Well, I'm going to take a different approach to this, Tom. I actually think, surprisingly, unusually, I think you're wrong about this. I think this has everything to do with AI and everything to do with AI policy, and not as much to do with personalities as some people think. Honestly, I do agree with you on one thing, though, and that's the money angle. As Upton Sinclair once said, it's difficult to get a man to understand something when his salary depends on him not understanding it. That's exactly what happened inside OpenAI. So let's go back to the beginning. OpenAI was founded not as another Silicon Valley startup, but as an alternative structure for Silicon Valley innovation. And specifically, it was a nonprofit organization. It is still a 501c3 nonprofit organization. And the goal of that organization was to build AI that was safe and beneficial to humanity. And if you look at the company's own mission statement, you will see that even today, the goal of OpenAI is not to maximize return to shareholder or to make a lot of money or anything like that. The goal is to build a safe and open general artificial intelligence. Now, over time, their mission went from building AI components to building a general AI, but the idea remains the same. And I think that that idealism is what attracted people to the company. I think that they felt like they were getting involved in something that was bigger and more important than the next Silicon Valley startup, than the next self-driving car startup or whatever it is. This is really obvious when you look at the board members, when you look at a lot of the people that went to work there, and when you look at the people that left and why they left. So there was a big schism at OpenAI when some of those idealists came head to head with the reality that Sam Altman and the team had built, which was essentially they created a for-profit subsidiary in 2018, and they raised billions of dollars. And the reason they did that was because they realized that AI is really freaking expensive. And unfortunately, they couldn't raise enough money from friends and family and concerned individuals to actually achieve their goal, their lofty, noble nonprofit goal. They needed to have cash. And in order to have cash, they needed to have a product. And in order to have a product, they needed to basically raise money the old-fashioned way. So they created this nonprofit subsidiary. Eventually, Microsoft put in $1 billion. Microsoft ends up owning 49% of the for-profit subsidiary of OpenAI. And it looks to me from the outside that that became sort of a thorn in the side of everyone who worked there every single day, because everyone had to look in the mirror in the morning and say, I came here to benefit humanity and build a safe and beneficial artificial intelligence. But what I'm actually doing is building the coolest, hottest startup product in Silicon Valley. We're, you know, raising the valuation of the company. We're enabling all these things. Every day there were news stories, hundreds, thousands of news stories every day about how dangerous and challenging the products that OpenAI was creating would be. It is completely antithetical to their mission statement. Everyone knew that. But again, as Mr. Sinclair said, everyone's salary and everyone's compensation package and everyone's stock options were dependent on them continuing to go in the capitalist product, you know, ethics be damned direction, instead of focusing on the mission of the company. This thing was bound to fail. And the failure started as soon as some of the board members started leaving. So they had a Republican Congressman, Will Hurd, They had, some people from other companies and so on. These people left. They ended up with a much smaller board, and the board couldn't agree on who would fill those vacancies. They ended up with basically four outside board members plus, two inside board members, and that's not really a great board. That basically set them up for this challenge. Then, you got Altman out there. I don't know if you noticed. I don't know if you've paid attention to the news, but for the last month or two, he's been, the most high profile person in Silicon Valley going out into the world. He met with, people all over the world. He had a really cringeworthy interview with Rishi Sunak over in the UK. He met with, investors in the Middle East. He met with investors in Asia. He's everywhere suddenly. And I think the board and some of the folks inside the company looked at that with great alarm, because they realized that the for-profit ethics be damned part of the company had well and truly won. Well, that's what happened here. They finally came to a head. The board members, who apparently still agreed with the mission statement of the board that they were challenged to uphold, no matter what they thought, their job as board members was to uphold that mission statement. They saw the company going in the wrong direction, and they decided to take action. Well, they didn't do it very smartly. They didn't do it very well. Rumor is they told Microsoft a grand total of 1 minute before announcing that they were going to do this. All of this was just a giant nightmare, but it was bound to happen. And now here we are a few days later, and it looks like the whole company threatened to walk, because, of course, if you're a regular employee, you came to this company partly for the high and mighty ethics, but also probably because you're getting paid a lot of money and you got a lot of stock options and things like that. And so the employees all decided, well, hey, I'm going to go to Microsoft and get my compensation package matched over there and be done with this nonsense once and for all, and follow Sam Altman, who is, the wunderkind of Silicon Valley. So why not? And so now they've pushed aside the board that made this decision, including Helen Toner, who was a board member who wrote a paper basically challenging, quietly challenging her own company on what it was doing and the direction it was taking. And all those people are gone. They're replaced by, some interesting individuals, including Larry Summers, former Treasury Secretary, Bret Taylor, who I think he's in the Social Network movie, and he was also a CEO of Salesforce. And yes, that Quora guy gets to stay. I would say that at this point, it looks like the for-profit group has well and truly won the day, and we can kiss the other stuff goodbye. And if you're really interested in ethical AI, well, there's a company called Anthropic that would love to talk to you.
Stephen, I can't fault your logic there, but I find it curious that if they were so worried about whether or not that the money side of this was going to take over and rule the day, why did they actually found a company to do this? Why didn't they give it to Stanford or another research university to develop this at a slow pace to make sure that they're following all the rules and they're subject to all of the reporting that organizations like that are required to do? Could it be because, realistically speaking, while they had their concerns, they also were concerned about the size of their bank account? And I hate to say it, but I will reference my good friend, Dr. Tracy Cart, once again. There are only two real motivations for people: fear and greed. They may have been afraid that AI would eventually take over the world, but they were bound and determined to get paid before that happened. So I feel like, yes, this is a very special situation. It's a very weird company setup that we haven't seen before. But once you boil it down to the basics, somebody wanted to get paid, somebody didn't want to, and that's where it all fell apart. Now, in 5 years, we'll know for sure what happened. This is either going to succeed beyond their wildest dreams, or it's going to fall apart massively and Microsoft gets to pick up the pieces because they basically have right of first refusal for all of the equipment. We're going to have to see what happens. But for right now, I wouldn't bet against Sam Altman on the next thing that he decides to do, because it looks like he's got an army behind him and ready to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so let's look forward and see where this goes. First off, again, Microsoft wins. Microsoft wins whether OpenAI is restarted under Sam Altman and continues to do what it was doing with ChatGPT-5 and general AI, because Microsoft gets access to the models, the weights, the data, everything. And they are going to continue to have access to that. Not only that, but this all runs on Microsoft Azure. And most of Microsoft's investment has been in the form of Azure credits. So Microsoft, basically, their cloud service runs rings around every other cloud service because they've got a guaranteed the gold, platinum, diamond, whatever customer running on their infrastructure. The other thing Microsoft wins is that they get access to everything that comes out of OpenAI. They get first access. They get best access. Bing gets to have a moment in the sun. Google is scrambling to catch up. Satya Nadella wanted to make Google dance, and he did, and he wins. If OpenAI collapses, well, Microsoft still has all that. They still have all the machines. They still have all the models. They still have everything. And they'll probably scoop up all the employees now, because again, every one of these employees has now said, yep, we're going to Microsoft if anything happens, including Sam Altman. So Microsoft wins, wins, wins. The problem is, who loses was this grand goal of creating an alternative corporate structure that would be beneficial and would create kind of a new Silicon Valley company. I understand what you're saying. You know, maybe you start this up within the Linux Foundation. Maybe you start this up within Stanford. But the truth is that they saw that this needed a new corporate structure. They tried it, and unfortunately, it failed. And that means that we're very unlikely to get more of these corporate structures. The other big loser here in my mind is, well, everyone else. Because the truth is that all of this technology is no longer going to be bound and burdened to ethics and high-minded statements. Essentially, we're going to reflect what the reality is, which is that everyone's going to run forward with artificial intelligence technology as fast and as loose as they can to try to make as much money as they can, as quick as they can. And we're not going to spend a lot of time worrying about how it affects anyone else. So Microsoft wins, we all lose, and Sam Altman gets to continue to raise money for his NVIDIA competitor and all these other things that he's doing.
Yeah, and like you said, we're going to keep a close eye on this, because obviously it's going to be a huge news story going forward into 2024. So make sure you're tuned into the rundown to check that out. We're closing out the end of 2023. Obviously, you know, in the U.S. this week, it's Thanksgiving, then we're getting into the holiday season. A lot of people are trying to wrap up their year-end budgets. So we don't really have anything coming up in the next couple of weeks, but stay tuned, because we do have our 2024 stuff that we'll be telling you about here pretty soon. But we will have episodes of The Rundown coming out through the holiday season, because invariably there's always something interesting that happens right at the end of 2023, and we want to make sure that you're aware of it. The easiest way to do that is to jump into our Rundown episodes. You can see them every week at around 12:30 Eastern time on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/GestaltITVideo. You can check out the show notes on GestaltIT.com, and you can listen to us in your favorite podcast application of choice. We'll be back next Wednesday, rested, fed, with another great episode. And we will have more interesting news stories, maybe a security breach or two, who knows. But you know what we do here on The Rundown. We bring you all the great stuff. And we thank you very much for tuning in and being a part of it each week. We'll see you next week with more great stories. Until then, take care, enjoy the holidays. We'll see you soon.